Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Senate Minority Whip John Thune, who joins us to discuss debt ceiling talks and the upcoming farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The House of Representatives failed to override President Joe Biden's veto of a bill to disapprove of his administration's efforts to rewrite the waters of the U.S. rule. The final vote was 227 to 196, falling well short of the two-thirds majority needed to override a veto. The Biden administration's WOTUS rewrite is already blocked in 26 states after two federal judges issued separate injunctions blocking the rule's enforcement. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is in Japan this week for a meeting with top agriculture officials in the G7. Vilsack told reporters Wednesday he expects Ukrainian exports to be top of mind for the assembled ministers and secretaries. He says failure to extend the Black Sea Grain Initiative could flood neighboring countries with Ukrainian grain, pushing down prices and hurting local farmers in the region. And finally, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy rolled out his proposal to raise the nation's debt limit, and work requirement changes are at the heart of the GOP's negotiations. House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson says addressing the issue during the debt ceiling debate and ahead of the farm bill could help speed up the reauthorization process. But Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow says there are already work requirements in place for SNAP recipients, and the issue doesn't need to be on the debt ceiling agenda. The work requirement debate was already shaping up to be a testy issue for Ag Committee leaders prior to the debt ceiling wrinkle. South Dakota Republican John Thune is a veteran of multiple farm bills during his time in the House and Senate. He says nutrition policy often leads to difficult farm bill politics.
You know, clearly they're trying to address, in the context of raising the debt, you know, what's causing the debt. And a lot of that's, spending and trying to get spending under control and institute some spending reforms, one of which is work requirements. So I think that bears on the farm bill debate because that's also a conversation we're having with regard to the nutrition title in the farm bill. So one way or the other, I hope we can make some headway towards some of those reforms because I think that needs to be done. And I think it gives us a lot more, frees up some baseline for the farm bill that we can do some things we need to do in other areas.
Well, as we look at the folks that are kind of supporting work requirement changes at this point, it's a pretty one-party issue. There isn't really much for Democratic Party support to change some of these work requirements. How do you go about changing that?
Right. Well, I think that it'll be challenging. If the House can execute on getting something across the finish line in the context of the debt limit or a farm bill that has some work requirements in it, then obviously the Senate would have to figure out how to deal with that. And I think that the Senate, you're probably right, there aren't going to be a lot of people. It takes 60 votes on the Senate floor. But if the House can get something done the Senate produces, I'm talking farm bill now, its own version of that, in conference, there might be a way you could work something out where you could achieve some savings in the nutrition title, either with regard to work requirements or other types of provisions. But one way or the other, I think these issues are going to get voted on. And I think that's appropriate.
Well, and all of this conversation, of course, happening in the context of a farm bill process that is going to have a pretty tight budgetary situation. And as we see right now, a number of the nation's farm groups coming to Capitol Hill with requests for a more supportive safety net as part of this farm bill as well. Given the budgetary environment that you're in, do you think that's going to end up being a feasible ask on the part of these farm groups?
I think a lot of it will depend on, again, whether or not we can free up underneath the baseline or the top line number that we have to work with, some additional resources to make that happen because reference prices are outdated. A lot's changed since the 2018 Farm Bill and, you know, with respect to prices in particular. And I think that if we could, it takes about $20 billion to increase reference prices 10% in programs like PLC. And about $50 billion to go up 20%. So we'd have to find some headroom. And that's what I think this exercise is going to be all about.
Well, and this, as we continue a conversation about commodity programs, we'd like to talk conservation too, but this might be getting a little in the weeds on my part, but, you know, do you anticipate, as you look at Title I of this upcoming Farm Bill, those commodity programs, any kind of conversation on the age-old base acres to planted acres debate as some part of Title I reforms in this upcoming bill?
I do. That's usually a part of the debate. I don't think there's any farm bill I've been associated with that doesn't have, in some fashion, we haven't had a conversation about base acres versus planted acres. These are going to be, some of them are going to be driven by budgetary considerations, but, you know, that clearly is an issue or a reform that makes a lot of sense. Whether or not it could be accommodated within the budget framework that we have to work with remains to be seen. But in the Title I, commodity title of the bill, which is, you know, the safety net programs that complement crop insurance, that's one of the issues that I think is probably long due for reform.
We'll continue our Farm Bill conversation with Senator John Thune right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Senator John Thune has been known to prioritize conservation program changes during the Farm Bill reauthorization process. The South Dakota Republican says this time around will be no exception.
Well, we've introduced a bill that, you know, has some cost share for, you know, water distribution, fencing, things like that, infrastructure issues. And then, of course, we lift the payment limit on CRP, which has been in place since 1985. And then we have some things, again, added flexibility with it comes to, with respect to hay and grazing, things that we've addressed in previous farm bills. But yeah, we're looking at that title hard. Got some ideas out there. And again, we'll see if we can get them incorporated into the base bill. And if not, we'll probably try by way of amendment, either at a committee markup or on the floor to have some of those issues addressed.
As you look at the conservation title and some of your priorities, there's also this elephant in the room of the Inflation Reduction Act and the, you know, the almost $20 billion in conservation spending in that bill. Is that kind of infusion of capital going to make it easier for some of your priorities to be accomplished? I mean, what role do you anticipate that funding playing in the upcoming farm bill debate?
Well, if we could free that up, for sure. I mean, I think it's a marker that was put out there in the Inflation Reduction Act. Many of us were wondering what they're, you know, how they're going to use it. But if we could figure out how to be able to get that into the mix as a source of funding, infusing that into the conversation on conservation, there are some things that we could probably do. And I think I hope we can do that. You know, the Democrats' priority and all this stuff is the climate agenda, the green agenda. But, and, you know, the one way to achieve that, in my view at least, is a good, strong, and robust conservation title in the Farm Bill. And so if we can get some of those dollars freed up to use on some of the things that we want to get done, and some of the things that we want to do take some resources. I certainly hope we can make that happen again. That'll be something we'll figure out here in the next few months.
Can you do some of the things like raise reference prices, double MAP and FMD funding, increase ag research funding, some of these wide-ranging priorities that folks are talking about right now? Can you accomplish some of those things without tapping that IRA funding?
It gets pretty hard, of course, given and until we exactly know what the number is. But I think with the growth in the nutrition title of the bill, the expansion that you've seen and score on that, it gets harder if you can't figure out a way to find some resources elsewhere. So, and there's a lot, as you said, a lot of interest in increased MAP funding and a number of other priorities which are going to take additional dollars. So I hope, again, in our conversations with the Democrats, with Stabenow's staff, and with Ranking Member Bozeman's staff, so we can figure out a way to accommodate some of the things we need to do within the conservation title and some of these other priorities. I mean, the marketing issues and the MAP program, those are all things that you've got a lot of support for farmers. But I do think that the groups need to keep their appetites realistic, knowing they're not going to get everything. So prioritize, figure out what are the top things you need. If the number one change that you need is reference prices, let's focus on that. and then we'll see where we can go from there.
So you mentioned Ranking Member Bozeman. We had him on our show here a couple of weeks ago, and he kind of outlined some of his red lines, the things that he's going to have to see if he's going to support a farm bill. What are those red lines for Senator Thune?
Strong, crop insurance program, first and foremost. That's a cornerstone foundation, if you will, of our modern farm program. And then, you know, hopefully changes in the commodity title that complement the safety net, the crop insurance program, but PLC and ARC, and then conservation, and then disaster is one too, where we get a number of ideas about how to make those programs more workable, more functional. And then on the livestock side, you know, taking a shot at country of origin labeling, a huge priority for livestock producers in South Dakota. And I've been working with Senator Tester on a proposal that would do that. And we'll test it out and see what the support for it is. But I think that's a really important reform, and it needs to be done in a way that we can survive a challenge at the WTO, and we've got to be willing to fight for our position. But, you know, again, it makes no sense to me that everything pretty much you use in your daily lives has a label on it, except the thing we put at the center of our plate.
Senator Thune, thanks for joining us.
Spencer, always good to be with you. Thank you.
We'll be right back with this week's panel, but first, our Lydia Johnson walks us through the next part of our Farm Bill Focus.
Title VI in the Farm Bill focuses on rural development. Rural development programs are grouped into three categories: rural business, rural utilities, and rural housing. Rural business programs promote the expansion of companies in farm country. Rural utilities construct and modernize infrastructure systems like broadband, water, and waste disposal. Rural housing programs build and improve housing and community facilities in rural areas. The 2018 Farm Bill changed a few RD programs, including the Rural Broadband Program and the Community Connect Program. Both programs help provide broadband service to rural areas through grants. USDA's ReConnect program also offers loans and grants to help with broadband deployment in rural areas that don't have sufficient access to broadband. However, this program is technically not a Farm Bill effort, so Congress could consider whether or not to permanently authorize it in the next Farm Bill. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We're going to continue our conversation on conservation policy in the context of the upcoming Farm Bill with a panel of experts who deal quite a bit with that subject, joined this week by Laura Wood Peterson with LWP Consulting, as well as Jeremy Peters with the National Association of Conservation Districts. And I appreciate both of you taking the time to join us here today. And Jeremy, I want to go to you first, because we look at a number of things facing conservation policy in the upcoming Farm Bill, including the debate about the future of about $20 billion in Inflation Reduction Act spending directed toward conservation programs. A number of folks kind of keeping an eye on that pot of money and wondering if that might be allocated elsewhere. But NACD is among the group of folks that are hoping that it will stay directed toward conservation programs. I guess before we get into kind of the rigmarole of where that money might go, I guess I'll just ask you, if it stays put, what does that kind of infusion of capital mean for the nation's conservation programs?
Yeah, well, it's really a historic, once-in-a-generation infusion of funding into conservation. You know, we've seen for years now the programs are oversubscribed, sometimes at a rate of 3-to-1, the dollars available to applications. And we really, you know, we want to be able to use this opportunity to get to that backlog of work that exists. We know farmers and ranchers like the programs. They utilize them. But there's just way more demand than we've had resources in the past. So we really want to keep those dollars in place USDA has already made announcements for fiscal 23. They're working on their fiscal 23 funding under the IRA now, and producers are signing up for those programs. So we need to let that process work out and make sure that producers have an opportunity to access the programs that they need.
So, of course, a number of folks, as I mentioned, looking at this IRA, this Inflation Reduction Act money, and wondering what it will mean in the context of the Farm Bill, as you mentioned there toward the tail end of that response, and you consider the fact that some folks wondering if that could, in fact, be worked into the Farm Bill baseline. And that's, frankly, a very nerdy ag policy conversation that we probably don't have the time to get into the full weeds of on this particular program. But are you getting any kind of read from the staffers on Capitol Hill about whether or not this will continue to be money allocated through a reconciliation package, or will there be attempts to work it into the Farm Bill baseline?
Yeah, I mean, the way that we're approaching it, we believe that the IRA funding needs to be left in place. We want to make sure that that remains available. And as we get into Farm Bill discussions, we also don't want to see a reduction in Farm Bill, the traditional Farm Bill funding, as a result of the IRA funds being in place.
Well, and Laura, we hear that so often that these conservation programs are oversubscribed. Producers are very interested in signing up, but oftentimes the dollars just aren't there. But I suppose that's the demand side. If we look at the supply side of the equation here, frankly, USDA pretty short-staffed across the country. Technical assistance is a conversation that is always dominating conservation politics. But I do wonder, frankly speaking, can USDA spend this much money on conservation programs given its current infrastructure and staffing levels?
That's a really good question. I think staffing issues across the federal government, really across our economy, are really important right now. Workforce development comes up in almost every meeting on Capitol Hill we're in. I do think they can spend the money. We're already into the IRA timelines for starting to spend it. But when you're going from such, doubling of programs in some cases, we do have a question around this, and a lot of other players from other sectors are stepping up to the plate to provide capacity. And I think that that public-private model will continue to advance to help fill in gaps. NRCS is also staffing up. So I think, the combination of efforts going on because of IRA, because of just general needs in the workforce, yes, they'll be able to spend it.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. While there was only one Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities grant signing ceremony at the Commodity Classic, Laura Wood Peterson with LWP Consulting says work is continuing behind the scenes with USDA's other grant recipients.
Yeah, there's a lot of action behind the scenes, and there are more being signed. I think given these IRA investments in the backdrop, right, we're going from 1.8 to 3.9 on average in EQIP, or doubling CTA to help support some of these. And so all of the work of USDA is really high impact at the moment, and this program is new. At the same time, I think they're moving at a pace that's quite a bit faster than an RCPP could, for example. So I think that because of federal contracting, because of the size of these awards, there's a lot of work yet to be done, and the unknowns of unknowns being new. But I really think that they are on track to have a large impact with a goal of reduced bureaucracy in general.
So I want to shift gears back then to the Farm Bill here, Laura. As you think about some of the things that you're going to be watching, maybe from a conservation standpoint generally, what are going to be kind of the bellwethers you're going to be keeping a close eye on in that conservation title of the upcoming Farm Bill?
I think the Farm Bill is going to have a hard time. I think that the farm economy is so strong that when you look at some of the asks and the costs around Title I or others, And then you look at what was released this morning on, you know, goals around reducing debt in America. These are not necessarily complementary. And so there's a lot of challenge in how you're going to restructure a farm bill in a way that adds a whole lot more money. So I think because of that, you're going to see this play out over a longer time frame. And I think there will be a lot of changes in the ag economy over the next 2 years that may impact new thinking. But for now, you know, I think that this is the thing to watch. This was a historic investment, like Jeremy said, and it could be that we get additional baseline. And even if we had to take a cut back in the short term to get that, that's a long-term win.
I want to wrap up talking about technical assistance with you, Jeremy, because obviously that has always been a top line issue within the conservation community, just getting the folks on the ground to help the producers implement some of these practices. Obviously, NRCS staff across the country helping producers do that, but NACD playing a pretty active role in that as well. There was some conservation technical assistance money in the Inflation Reduction Act. There's been some investments in that recently. Walk us through what the current infrastructure on the ground looks like. Do we have enough folks quite yet, or are there still gaps across the country?
We always can use more boots on the ground. There's always new people coming in the door of the local offices that are seeking assistance, and they need to have the correct support in place to be able to understand what's available to them. You know, whether they need a conservation plan, whether they need to be considering enrolling in a Farm Bill conservation program, or some of the other opportunities that are coming down the pipeline. So that technical assistance is just absolutely essential to make sure that we've got the personnel in place, that we've got the highly skilled, highly trained technical staff that work every day throughout the 3,000 local service centers across the country. And, you know, we need to make sure that as we're thinking about the future, as we're thinking about future needs, that we're keeping that workforce in place, and we're making sure that, that no producers that are coming in the door are turned away just because there's lack of personnel to help service their needs.
Very good. Well, of course, a number of things to keep a very close eye on in that conservation title, from investments to programs to people. Plenty of things to watch as Congress begins its deliberations on the Farm Bill, something we expect to see here before too long. But we'll be keeping a close eye on the conservation language, as will Laura and Jeremy. Thanks to you both for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel walks you through the latest drought information in this week's Map It Out.
Atmospheric rivers and snowstorms are hitting much of the western U.S. this winter, leading to a remarkable improvement in drought conditions. As you can see from the latest U.S. drought monitor, dry conditions have, for the most part, left California and surrounding states. The biggest areas of concern are now in Kansas and Oklahoma, along with parts of Nebraska, Texas, and New Mexico. Lack of moisture and heavy winds have created dust storms in many areas and increased the risk of wildfire. Kansas usually accounts for 25% of U.S. winter wheat output and 17% of total U.S. wheat output. But the multi-year drought has gripped much of the nation's wheat belt, putting harvest prospects in doubt for many producers. According to USDA's most recent weekly crop report, 13% of the winter wheat crop in Kansas is in good condition. 60% is in either poor or very poor condition. Only 12% of winter wheat is in good condition in Oklahoma, while 53% is in either poor or very poor. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House Ag Committee will convene a Monday Farm Bill listening session in Florida, a Wednesday subcommittee hearing to get producer input on Capitol Hill, and a Thursday subcommittee hearing on digital assets. The annual meeting for the North American Agricultural Journalists will be Monday and Tuesday in Washington. We'll have the latest farm policy news throughout the week on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.